The Lifestyle Show, presented by Selena McKenzie.
Now, Maria Compton was born, raised and married within a strict Christian sect. With her husband, she had six children and raised them in the teachings of their religion. But theirs was not a happy marriage. Over the course of more than two decades, Maria was abused by him and felt increasingly trapped within the confines of her religion. After years of unhappiness and declining mental health, she left. And she's bravely here to tell her story. Thanks for joining us, Maria.
Thank you for having me.
So, for obvious reasons, we're going to keep your real identity a secret, but this was all part of the Plymouth Brethren Christian Church, I believe.
That's correct. It was, yeah.
We often think of these sort of sects being mainly in America, don't we? But they're quite openly in Britain now.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest shock whenever I tell my story, is that these people are, you know, living amongst us, living next door to us. Yeah, absolutely.
And were you born into it?
Yes. Yeah. There's very few recruitments. It's mostly born into. So I was fourth generation. So Yes, immersed and born into it.
So are all the other generations of your family still there? Are you the only one to leave?
Yeah, I'm the only one to leave. I have got some cousins, both sides of my parents' families, who left many years ago, who I talk about it in my memoir, how I reconnected with them in 2019. So it was 1974 was the last time I saw some of my cousins. And then, yeah, I've reconnected since I left, which has been pretty amazing, yeah.
I suppose, like you say, the sect sort of lives among us, and everybody thinks that it's a, you know, you've got this perfect life, but there were so many rules. I mean, you weren't allowed to cut your hair, you couldn't use computers, you couldn't watch television. So many rules I was reading about. Were you able to go to school, or were you homeschooled?
At that time, as a child, I was able to go to school. But nowadays, they have their own school system. They even have their own shops as well. So, but for me, yes, I went to mainstream school, which was extremely hard, to be honest. I touched on it in my memoir, you know, just sitting out of religious education, not being able to even watch educational television, not being able to go to swimming lessons for a time. Many things that it made it really difficult being in mainstream school. And yeah, I sort of, well, I was classed as a bit of a weirdo, I suppose, really.
Oh, yeah. So I suppose when your other classmates had religious education, did your parents tell the school that you weren't allowed to go to the classes then?
Yeah, so what generally happened, certainly in primary school, when religious education came around, the teacher would ask me to leave the room. So it was already arranged with the headmaster of the school. The teachers knew about us. You know, there was my siblings were there and some of my cousins were there. So it was sort of known, and nobody really questioned it, which in this day and age, I'm sure it would be questioned. But certainly back then, it was never questioned by the teachers. And I often think now, what would they think now, looking back on it?
Yeah, that's probably why they don't let them go to school now, because it would be questioned.
Absolutely, yeah, that's a big thing. And also, you know, there's absolutely no influence from the outside world then, now either. You know, when I went to school, I sort of was able to watch how the world worked. That was as much as you got, was just sort of watching what other children did, really. But Obviously you couldn't immerse yourself in their world because we didn't mix with them. And we didn't socialise with them.
Yeah, and you as a child who was born into this just thought that that was your normal life. Your religion was your religion. That's what your parents and grandparents had said. So why would you question it?
Yeah, and I suppose, certainly before going to school, I didn't know any different and didn't think about it so much. As I went on into senior school, it became more obvious to me how different we were. You got bullied for it. And, you know, just even the fact that we went home for lunch, we weren't allowed to eat or drink with anybody else apart from those who we have the Lord's communion with, you know. So yes, it's just so many things that isolated you, and as much as they could control you, even in a mainstream school, they did.
And what was rapture? I read that you lived in fear of something called rapture.
Yeah, so the rapture, I suppose, is what's referred to as. So, yeah, that's a belief where Christ will come down and take what they call the bride of Christ. So the bride of Christ basically is the PBCC in their minds. Sorry, the Plymouth Brethren Christian Church. So, yeah, they will be raptured up into heaven, and everybody that is ready will go. And obviously, as I mentioned in my memoir, as a young child, I never felt ready, you know. And that fear, you know, it's. I realised that that fear even stayed with me probably till about 4 years after my escape. Because later on, we were taught that it would happen on a Sunday during the morning communion. And after I left, if I ever saw any of my family's cars or anything like that, sometimes I'd even drive past their houses to see if their cars were there. And then I would think, oh, it's okay, the rapture hasn't come yet.
Oh, it must have been awful. I can't imagine. I mean, you were growing up and you were just indoctrinated into it all, wasn't you?
Yeah, I mean, people talk about brainwashing, but I would like to say talk about it more as a conditioning, you know, brainwashing. You knew something before and then you were brainwashed into something, whereas the life of Plymouth Brethren Christian Church is conditioning from birth. That's the whole idea of it. So you don't know anything else. And it's really, I think that's what makes it so much harder when you do escape, is to get that conditioning out of you. Certainly for me, you know, I was 44 when I left. So yeah, it's not been easy.
I'm sure. And I know that when you were still in your teens, actually late teens, you married a man you barely knew. So was it an arranged marriage?
I wouldn't call it arranged, but the rules really were that boys and girls didn't mix. So we didn't tend to talk to the opposite sex much. Maybe in a group setting we would sometimes. But if you started talking to somebody on a one-on-one, and, you know, that was basically it, really, that's what was going on. That was as much as a dating was, really, was just that. And there may have been some looking across the meeting hall at them and smiling at them, and a lot of, yeah, if you were dating somebody, that was all it was, really. Yeah. There was no physical touch. There was, you were limited as to how much you could talk to that person. And because my ex-husband was from another place, that limited you even more. So, you know, we were given, I think I talk about this in my memoir, what we were given, an hour a week to talk on the telephone, and then I would have met him just once a month. But like I say, you were never allowed to be on your own with him, who you were going to marry.
Yeah.
And, you know, in fact, he never actually asked me to marry him. It was just a foregone conclusion that once we started talking in that way, that's what would happen. So, yes, I barely knew him. But on the other hand, because we all grew up in the same culture, you had a sort of trust. And I think that's, you know, where you can't trust people just because they've been in the same culture, you know. And I didn't know this man. And then even when, you know, some of the things he did, I didn't know if that was maybe what was happening in everybody else's marriage, you know. It's, Yeah,
I was going to ask you that, actually, because I know, I won't go into details, but I know he was very violent, very aggressive, and he abused you. Is that how men were taught to think about women, or was that just him?
I think it was more extreme in his case. I think his upbringing of his parents was more strict, shall we say, than some. Because I wouldn't say my own parents have had an unhappy marriage like me. So I don't think it's everybody. I do think that there's a lot of it in there that we don't know about. But certainly, I would never say that about my parents. They had a loving relationship. Yes, the man has always got control over the woman, but in the extent that I talk about, especially sexually, with my ex-husband, I wouldn't say that's the case for everybody. And I suppose with my memoir, you know, the story is my story and what happened to me. I'm not saying that that's happened to everybody in there. My story and what happened.
Yeah. I'm just wondering if you could have gone to somebody, if you could have gone to your parents or somebody else within the faith, or would they have just said, well, you know, you're married to him, it's up to him what he does?
Yeah, I mean, in the latter years of our marriage, certainly I did go to my parents, but the rules are that parents mustn't interfere in marriage with their children. So their hands were tied, you know, there was very little they could do. You know, the time when they did take me away from the situation, but they had to put me right back in it, you know. And even since I've left, you know, in the early days when my parents were still trying to get me to go back, I remember my father shouting at me and saying, sort your marriage out, you know.
Right.
It's not like that. And then even when you never got talking to professionals about it, you know, there's no, I remember like my doctor maybe recommended, I must have told the doctor a little bit and she recommended going to something like Relate. Well, there was no way that would happen.
No,
there was no way of any, even in the years, you know, when I suffered with my mental health and I saw a psychiatrist, it was all a secret. Never would I have dared talk about what was really going on. You know, you just didn't.
Yeah.
This life of ours was a secret and the outside world mustn't know about it.
Oh, it must have been so stifling.
Oh, yeah, unbelievable. Yes. Yeah. Yes. I mean, the longer I'm away from it, the more I realise that. And yeah. How crazy it was in a way.
Yeah, you don't always see these things when you're in it. It's not till you're on the other side and you see things from another point of view. And I know exactly what you mean by that. But you did go on to have 6 children, I'm assuming, with that husband.
Yes.
So you must have stayed. Did you say you left at 44 and you got married late teens? So you stayed quite a while.
Oh, yeah, yes. Yeah, we were over 25 years married, yes. Yes, well, I suppose, well, there's no contraception, so, you know, you were very much controlled in that way as well. Yes. So children did come along quickly. And, of course, once the children started coming, it was that just made it harder. You know, you were much more tied.
Yeah.
Your life was so hectic as well, you know. So much of your brain space and mind is taken up with all the entertaining we have to do and babies and going to church every day. And, you know, there really is so little time to think to yourself. And yes. Then added to that, there's, you know, alcohol consumption. And, yeah, and again, I suppose that's the whole idea is that you don't have time to think or plan or, yeah. So, and I suppose it just gets to a point, certainly for me, it got to a point at the age of 44 that it was life or death for me.
Yeah. What was that point, Maria? What made you suddenly decide, I can't do this anymore, I've got to leave? Because it's actually, I think, a very brave decision.
Yeah, like I say, it is life or death, and it certainly was life or death for me. It was that consideration of ending everything, of ending my life, of ending everything. And I was so close to that because I couldn't see a way out. And it was that there was just some voice said to me, there is another way. And it was so liberating. Once I came to that, I could never, nothing would turn me back. It was, you know, people say, oh, you're so strong. It was just once I saw that, there was actually another life, that it just, yeah, I can't even describe the feeling that that was, especially the feeling of freedom. You know, I remember people in the shops commenting, you don't just look different because your hair is shorter and your makeup's done, but your head's lifted up and you've got a smile on your face. And that, you know, that's exactly it. It's, but I think, well, certainly for me, and I, for many that I know that have left, it is that facing death, really, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that was the last straw. That was the last straw. How did you physically do it? I mean, do they allow you to, are you allowed to leave, or did you have to sort of do it in the dead of night so that you could escape?
No. I mean, to start with, I did think, you know, I thought maybe somebody will have to kidnap me, or I really didn't know how I was going to get out. And, I was in quite a lot of torment over that time of how I was going to actually do it. But in the end, I just knew I couldn't walk out my front door away from my children. I never ever wanted them to say I left them. And so it was just, it was a case of just saying, this is over. You know, the marriage is over, but not only that, I'm over this whole thing. I can't go to another meeting. I'm done. And once those words came out, the liberation again, the power that I felt, there was no going back on it once the words were said. And then it ended up totally unexpected to me that my so-called priests came and said, would it help if my ex-husband moved out of the house? I think they felt that maybe just some time away and I would come to my senses.
Mm.
But that was ideal for me, because then, yeah, he was out of the house and I was left with the six children.
So you with your children now? You are with your children?
No. No, so very quickly, the oldest three, who were well in their 20s at this time, they left me. You know, that I'm not saying they left me in that was what they really wanted to do, but they were coerced into leaving me, is what I would say now. Mm-hmm. You know, they couldn't live with somebody that was, you know, walking around wearing trousers and, you know, going out on dates with men and wearing makeup and, you know, just living, trying to live life as a normal worldly person, as they would call it. So they just, yeah, it wasn't really an option for them in the eyes of the sect. And so the first three left, well, first two of them left quite quickly. And then my eldest stayed for a little while and then he also left. And I do speak about in the memoir what each of those leaving was like. Then I did, through the courts, I managed to get custody of the other three. And they were permitted to live with me by law till they were 16. But again, gradually, once they were over the age of 16, they were also coerced into leaving me, yeah.
They went back to the faith, I suppose.
Well, I suppose it was difficult because of the ages they were. I felt that, you know, they were in their early teens. It was a massive disruption for them, as you can imagine. It was, you know, life-changing. One thing, the marriage was over, but for me to actually leave everything that I'd known, I think that was the biggest shock for them. And, yeah, I didn't stop them going to the daily meetings. I didn't stop them going to the school because I felt that would be more of a disruption. Whether, you know, looking back, I could have done more is difficult to say. I suppose I was doing the best I could at that time.
Of course you were. I can't imagine what you must have been going through. And are you in touch with any of your family, your parents, or are none of them in touch?
If I email my dad would be the only contact I've got. And if I email, he might email back, just a very short email. Or he might not. It's difficult to say, but yeah.
And how long have you been, let's say, free now?
12 and a half years, so yeah.
And you're happy, are you? You live in a good life?
Yes, absolutely. I got married last year and yeah.
Oh, wow. To a loving husband, I assume.
Yeah. So, yeah, in my memoir, I don't get as far as the marriage, but yes.
Well, you'll have to write a book too then.
I think I could write more books. I could maybe write a book on the dating world outside of a sect.
Ah, right. Let us know. Well, this particular book, your memoir, is called Out of Faith, A Mother, A Sect and A Journey to Freedom. It's by Maria Compton, who we're chatting to now. And I believe it's out tomorrow. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's out in the paperback. Back tomorrow, yes. Yeah.
Well, congratulations, yeah. And I wish you lots of luck with it. Thank you so much for being so open and honest, Maria.
No, thank you.
Take care
very much.
Now. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye.